Hey, it's me, Lars Larson. Thanks for checking out my podcast, and be sure to tell a friend about the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, and welcome to a Monday on Honestly Provocative Talk Radio. Glad to have you with me. I have to tell you something, with all the distractions that we've got right now. We've got war in Ukraine. We've got the January 6th committee with its dog and pony show, single party dog and pony show. I know they call it bipartisan, but is it bipartisan when both sides are chosen by Nancy Pelosi? I don't think so. But with all those things going on, the concerns I have are much more basic: food and fuel and the future of America. And I'm worried especially about food and food shortages that we seem to be headed for. I pointed out to you that a couple of months ago, the president of the United States, that would be Joseph Biden, at least that's what the election is supposed to have produced, he stood there in Europe and said, we're going to have food shortages, not just here in Western Europe, we're going to have them in America, which is kind of a startling statement because America knows how to grow food so much better than so many other countries on this planet. We know how to grow food so well that we literally have to pay farmers not to farm 44 million acres of America. Why? Because if we produced as much food as this country could actually produce, we would overwhelm all of the other foreign markets. We would drive some countries that are largely agrarian countries, we'd drive them into the ditch economically. And we've chosen not to do that. And we've chosen to provide a lot of room for, you know, wildlife and things like that. But right now, if you go to the grocery store, Tina and I have been to the grocery store, and we see the changes almost every single week. Stratospheric prices for some very basic foods. I've got a brother-in-law who likes to cook chicken, and Don said, usually I can get, you know, six big chicken breasts for $6, $7, maybe $8. He walks in the other day at $16. And you ask yourself, how can the average family afford this? And the short answer is, they can't. I mean, in the short run, people will do what they have to do. They'll burn down their savings. They'll load up their credit cards. But there is trouble coming at us. Some shelves at the stores that are not full all the time. In a country where fuel, energy, and food have stripped most family budgets right to the bone. And then over the weekend, I got this email from a woman who lives not 60 miles away from where I live. And she was inspired to write to me. I don't know that I've heard from her before. But because I would have noticed her name, Hadassah, which is the other name for Esther, the Esther of the story of Esther in the Bible. And she wrote to me about something that kind of stunned me. Most of the folks I know who are ranchers and farmers try to do a lot of their own vet work because it's a lot cheaper to give an animal a shot than it is to call the vet and have the vet do it when you know how to do it yourself. So she writes to me, and this seemed really crazy to me, that a very, very basic medicine, penicillin, dates back over 100 years. You'll remember it made a huge difference in World War I. Penicillin, out of stock, is the short answer. But let me tell you what she told me. And I'll be glad to get your phone calls and emails about what you know about this situation. But she said, Lars, I just want to let you know about the shortage of basic penicillin for livestock. My daughter is raising a 4-H market lamb for the county fair, which the lamb came down with a fever this week. My basic go-to for my sheep is penicillin. This is a cheap and effective treatment that I've been using for over 30 years in raising livestock. So I went to our local coastal store to find out, and they didn't have any. The next day I went into Wilco to grab some because I had only one dose left. Now, the way she says grab some and that note, it'd be like somebody calling you and saying, hey, your sweetheart calls you and say, can you stop on the way home and buy some aspirin? And you say, oh, yeah, aspirin, no big deal. I'll walk into almost any store and I'll be able to buy aspirin. That's the kind of thing penicillin is for the livestock community and the ranchers and the farmers. Next day, I went to Wilco to grab some because I only had one dose left. They were out. They offered to check their other stores. None of the other stores had any. I called another store and they told me they're out and they don't expect any until the end of the year. They said, go to my vet. I called my vet. They're out. This is the most basic medicine for anyone who raises livestock. I called around and around and found one store that had two bottles left. I drove half an hour to get those bottles. I probably ended up buying the last penicillin in the surrounding 50 miles. I began checking all my online livestock suppliers. They're all out of penicillin, and they are nationwide distributors. I tried not to panic as the gas prices have gone up and up. I tried not to panic as I saw food shelves empty in many of the stores. I've tried not to panic as the prices of each bag of chicken and sheep food goes up and up. I tried not to panic as the hay suppliers around us have run out of hay. And because of the wet conditions in our area, the farmers are not expecting to be able to cut until weeks later than normal. Because of the high fertilizer prices, many small farmers are unable to fertilize this year. They will have smaller yields of hay. That's going to make it even harder to get hay this winter. The prices have already gone up for hay, and I expect them to easily double. I'm lucky to have friends who have a small hay operation, and they will come over and cut my grass field. It's terrible hay, but it'll work in a pinch if we can't find anything else for our livestock. Because of rising meat prices, we've allowed our hens to have babies, and we'll be butchering our roosters for food. They're small, but meat is meat. Today, I had to get some diesel for our small tractor. I counted out the dollar bills and quarters to get $11 in my container. $10 used to fill that can, but now I can only get 1.8 gallons. I needed the gas for my tractor to clear some more land to begin planting a victory garden for this fall. We're trying to do everything we can to prepare for what is likely a very huge possibility of severe food shortages this fall and winter. Through all of this, I've tried to maintain my cool as I tell my kids we can't get groceries like we used to. We've always tried to live frugal on one income. I've been a stay-at-home mom, raising and homeschooling my three girls. My husband is a school teacher at the local school. He drives his 99 Ford Taurus. Our truck is hauling livestock. That's a 1995. We drive old cars and we fix them to hold our costs down. I've raised a couple of litters of golden doodles the last couple of years to help pay for extras like braces for our kids. I'll probably be polishing up my resume to get a job to help cover the rising costs. I even changed my own oil today to save on money. I ended up buying myself my first handgun on my 40th birthday and proceeded to get a concealed carry license. I will not be a victim. But what I really think scares me is that people don't see the semi that is about to hit them as they're walking down the middle of the road blind. I was never a conspiracy theorist until the last couple of years when everything people said couldn't possibly be true actually was. I'm not trying to be an alarmist, but I'm trying to get word out. These are just things that have happened to me and my friends. What is going on with others? Are they seeing this too? Am I totally wrong? Thanks for time in reading this, Hadassah Webb. I wrote back to her and I said, this is stunning because I haven't talked to any of my more close rancher friends recently, but I would imagine they're going to tell me the same thing. When you're out of something so basic as penicillin so that ranchers and farmers can give their livestock shots, what exactly is coming at us? And are all of us getting ready enough for what is going to happen? Glad to be with you on a Monday. Always glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Coming up on the Radio Northwest Network are almost two dozen charities attacked in the last 6 weeks. And these are charities whose whole purpose is life and death for children.
That makes a lot of sense, a lot of nonsense.
Right, you're bloody well right. You know you got a right to sit.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
Brought to you by Handyman Maintenance Remodeling. You can find them at hmrservices.net. That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead, Fish Wrapper, or mainstream media bias.
If abortions are not safe, then neither are you. That is the threatening graffito that is painted across the entrance of just one of the more than 20 pregnancy resource centers around America. The ones that have come under attack in just the last month with burglaries, with break-ins, with demolition, with graffiti, and also with arson. Last week, someone, likely an angry pro-abortion activist, set the Gresham Pregnancy Resource Center on fire. These centers do good things. They offer young pregnant women an alternative to aborting their babies. They offer real help so the new mom can afford to give birth to her baby and then either keep it and love it or give it up to the endless list of families who are waiting to adopt. But the pro-abortion crowd absolutely hates that idea. They hate it enough that they want to destroy the people who only want to preserve life. They promise what abortion activists now call a summer of rage. Now, the FBI warns that those who commit such crimes may face federal criminal charges. The FBI ignored the last summer of rage 2 years ago when Antifa and BLM set American cities on fire and did billions of dollars in damage. Later this week, the Supreme Court overturns its most serious mistake, Roe v. Wade. When it does, the same folks who want unbridled authority to kill innocent babies seem likely to turn their rage against those of us who defend life. And you kind of wonder why. Isn't it enough for you to support abortion if that's what you want to support? Do you have to actually attack those who say maybe there's another way? At least 23 pro-life centers have been attacked, firebombed, or vandalized in recent weeks. Threats have increased to a fever pitch level. And protesters have descended on Supreme Court Justice Holmes with Joe Biden's express permission. Literally, we ran the soundbite from his spokeswoman who said we encourage people to protest at the homes of Supreme Court justices. Whether you know that or not, there's a federal law that says it's illegal to do that if what you're trying to do is get the justice to vote differently on an important case. And there's no doubt in my mind that that's exactly what these so-called protesters want to do. A Democrat assassin last week tried to kill Justice Brett Kavanaugh. Yet the Democrats have been silent about it. Joe Biden has yet to say one single word about it. He's leaving most of that to his press secretary. And it's worth asking, is this the whirlwind that Chuck Schumer promised back in 2020 when he threatened, if you keep making these decisions, you won't know what hit you, Kavanaugh? Is this part of the mini revolution that Joe Biden predicted on Jimmy Kimmel? Is this part of the pressure campaign that Nancy Pelosi has urged activists to start after the draft decision was leaked? And by the way, they haven't found the leaker just yet. On Truth Social, I love this. Quadruple vaxxed Justin Trudeau of Canada gets COVID again and says what? The same thing they all say. I've tested positive for COVID-19. I'll be following public health guidelines and isolating. I feel okay because that's why I got my shots. So if you haven't got it, get vaccinated. If you can, get boosted. Let's protect our healthcare system, each other, and ourselves. A guy who's been quadruple vaxxed gets COVID for a second time and says, make sure you get your shot. It'll protect you. Can you see the logical disconnect there at all? On Twitter, our friend Andy Ngo points out, flashback to May of 2020, mobs of far-left rioters tried to storm the White House. They were repelled by police who were assaulted and hit with projectiles. Democrats and leftists then condemned law enforcement at the time for stopping the rioters from trashing the White House. And our question of the day, and this is a serious one, and I'd love to get a response from the school district, although I'm not going to hold my breath. Should schools push pride celebration on kids who are too young to understand sexual orientation? This one came in from Anna Mugika. Good morning, Lars. I listen to your show. I want to share what they're doing to indoctrinate kids in Eugene. My husband and I won't allow that to happen to our 8-year-old, as this is her last week in a government school. We are starting a Christian homeschool program in September. The Buena Vista school principal sent the Spirit Week themes for this week. It's optional for the children if they want to dress up or not, but still, today's theme is pride, as you can see in the picture I'm sending you. I sent an email to the principal to share how alarmed I am that she would choose that theme for young kids. I'm keeping my daughter home because she doesn't know or understand sexual orientation. She's 8 years old. Even though it's optional, I don't know if any teacher will bring that topic up. She could have picked pajamas, superheroes, or something more appropriate for elementary kids. It's so sad and disgusting that this is how public school has brainwashed and groomed the kids. I know two teenage girls that are telling their moms they want to be boys. What's next? A drag queen show? Yeah, in some school districts like New York, they're actually spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to put on drag queen shows. Anna says, I've already been called homophobic by an acquaintance for not agreeing with child indoctrination. I don't care if an adult makes these choices, but children need to be children. I will speak out to protect them. Signed, Anna Mugika. Now, I want to mention one other thing. Another parent alerted me that in the Evergreen School District in Vancouver, they're actually doing an LGBTQIA plus clothing swap. I'll get into the details of it later. They're literally encouraging, it sounds like, young ladies to bring in the clothing they wear so that young men who are now identifying as women can get clothing from them to wear in their new identity. And if anybody thinks that's appropriate, I'd be glad to hear why. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe you're just really, really stupid.
Presented by Rogue Conveyors. Go Rogue.
Well, thank goodness we aren't going to have Kate Brown around much longer. She's a lame duck governor. She finishes her term at the end of this year, and she will be term limited out. But over the weekend, she posted this. With graduation season upon us, I want to give big congratulations to all of Oregon's class of 22 graduates. Your hard work, perseverance, curiosity, and passion have led you to this moment and will drive all your future successes. I can't wait to see what you do next. Now, many of you might read that and say, well, that's fine. I said, well, hold on a second, Kate. A third of the kids drop out of government-run public schools. That's a failure. Half of those who do finish can't make the minimum marks on standard tests. Oregon has the shortest school year in the country. And the law that Kate Brown signed says graduates don't have to read, write, or do math. So even if you're smart and you learned in school, Governor Brown has trashed your diploma, but you have her congratulations for what that's worth. Jason writes in with today's best email of the day, brought to you by Mobile Joe's RV Collision. Get back on the open road and back to your adventure with Mobile Joe's. No body damage, too big or small. Collision or paint repairs, Mobile Joe's RV Collision fixes them all. Lars, my daughter rode the MAX train Saturday morning from Gresham City Hall to the Moda Center and back. What the hell happened to the rail system? Going into Portland, multiple people sleeping on a MAX, taking up many seats. The MAX train was dirty and smelly. I'm seeing people sleeping at the stops and doing drugs. Torn seats from knives, people sleeping. It's a mess. Train was dirty and smelly. TriMet Security needs to go back to the trains and start cleaning up. Signed, Jason Prude. Back in just a moment. It's a Monday, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show.
Larson Show, it's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. Here we are nearly in the middle of June, and it's still raining, and it's going to rain for a while yet. And my friend Chuck Weiss, the meteorologist, is the guy I like to turn to when questions like this come up. Chuck, you just wrote a long, and I thought it was a brilliant piece that you wrote for some of the people on a website that concerns itself with global warming debunking. And I want to compliment you because you've raised the question, and I imagine you have the answer if anybody does. Are we looking, at least here in the Pacific Northwest, at a year without a real summer?
Well, Lars, we could very well end up with that. What I've discovered looking back through the records is these ocean cycles that I've talked about on your show before, they tend to go in 20 to 30 year cycles. There is such a thing called the cold phase of the Pacific Decadal Oscillation. Then there's the warm phase. And from 1977 till roughly 2007, we were in the warm phase, which allows us to have more El Niños. It allows more mobile heat transport from the tropics to the poles, and global temperatures tend to warm. Severe weather goes down, both hurricanes and severe weather on the West Coast. Whereas when you're in the cold phase, the temperature arrangement of the oceans changes, where the tropical Pacific with increased La Niñas becomes colder than average. The waters in the Gulf of Alaska become colder than average, and that cold water extends down the west coast of the United States. And at the same time, the Gulf of Mexico and the Atlantic Gulf Stream become warmer than average. Now, that combination in cold phase PDO liberates potential energy across the latitude lines and increases storm intensity, not just here, but also in the Midwest, where we see tornado frequency go up, the amount of severe tornadoes increases, and the probability that there'll be more severe hurricane strikes on the Gulf Coast residents of Cat 3, 4, and 5 storms, it goes up as well because those waters have become warmer. So the phase we're in right now tends to bring more severe weather everywhere in the northern hemisphere. That's the way these ocean cycles work. They have absolutely nothing to do with CO2, human climate change, or anything. And the fact that we're in a colder and wetter pattern right now, we actually went into this cold phase starting in 2020, but it's gotten really intense now. And the last time on the records I saw the cold phase PDO pair with La Nina like it's doing to the severity that it's doing was way back in the year 1955. That summer and the summer of 1962 and 2011, some other notable years, were also cooler than average and a little wetter than average. So we're in that type of scenario now. And one of the questions I raised was, now that we are, if severe weather goes up, if severe weather frequency goes up, and climatologically here on the west coast of the United States, we are overdue for a severe windstorm. If we get such a storm and we get more tornadoes and more severe hurricanes on the east coast, are they going to blame this on climate change? Which, of course, they're going to. They always do. This huge lie coming out of the White House is totally responsible for the gas prices where they are, because whether this jerk Joe Biden wants to admit it or not, he is the one that basically cut off the oil supply and our energy independence and drove these gas prices to where they are, all in the name of these climate crazies that claim that we have to do this to save the earth from itself and to save us from ourselves, when in truth, none of that's true. But they obscure what's really going on, and they're not talking about any of these changes that we've seen in the ocean cycles, because they want to blame everything on human CO2 emissions.
Well, so and Chuck, up,
and
Chuck,
I
just,
it out
just
yesterday and wrote it out.
You anticipated that people would say, well, you know, whatever bad thing happens, it's going to be because of global warming. Except that when you point out that the last time we had conditions like this and produced a summer like this was in 1955. This was back when it was even before the 70s, when a lot of scientists said we're headed for maybe another small ice age. And when all the talk was about cooling before it changed into warming, and they stuck with global warming for a while, and now they just call it climate change. But it's not new, and you certainly couldn't have called it because of CO2 back in 1955, could you?
No, you absolutely could not, because of that back in 1955. And the another important thing to realize from this is, Lars, once these ocean changes take place and you get more La Nina activity in the tropical Pacific than El Nino, the tropical Pacific is the greatest mobile heat source to the North Hemisphere's climate. And if you pool the warm water up in the western Pacific and get more La Ninas and cause cold water upwelling, which that process does, these current global temperatures we have will be unsustainable. There'll have to be some cooling. And that's going to invite a lot of trouble for those failed climate models and modelers that have blamed the rise in temperature due to atmospheric CO2, which that's not the reason why it went up. It was these ocean changes and natural things that are really driving the climate, just like we're now in cold phase, which is likely to persist for another 20 years. And when it does, the mobile heat supply is shut off more from the tropics, and it'll cause the temperatures to go down. So if we actually reverse the temperature trend, that's very troublesome for those that promote this. But of course, a lot of us who know and do real science, we've known this for a long time. These climate policies, Lars, are disastrous. They've got to stop. These people are ruining our economy, and we're going to get nothing for it.
Well, just so I can translate this into practical terms, electricity across America has gone up 73 to 230% since Biden came into office. And a lot of that is a result of specific policies you can point to and say, these are the policies they're pushing that are pushing electricity costs up. And I don't know how many people heard, but there's a major pork producer, and they have 45 different states in which they have major pork producing operations. The one in California, they're going to close at the end of the year. Now, part of that is regulation. Part of that is taxes. Part of that is the cost of labor. But they mentioned specifically that their utility costs, imagine how much electricity it takes to run a big pork plant. They're saying their costs are four times higher in California. Well, what's California? A state that has pursued green policies, solar panels, windmills, pushing electric cars, and all the rest. And yet they've had blackouts and brownouts down there. And now they've got a major company that's saying, we're leaving the state. And a big part of the reason we're doing it is utility costs. So this translates into real things with real jobs and real products. Doesn't mean that that company isn't going to produce pork in the other 44 states that it does business in. But they're actually saying, we're going to move. And a big part of the reason is the climate policies that have driven energy policies.
That's right. And also, there, you know, it's just laughable when the energy secretary says, oh, everybody, if you don't like the gas prices, buy an electric vehicle. Even if somebody could afford to do that, if everybody they want to do it could, the electric grid right now in the current situation that it's in cannot support the load it would put on it. You'd have these brownouts and blackouts expand to the entire country. These people are nuts. They don't even think that far ahead to be able to figure this out. And look what they've done to gas prices. All in the name of saving the planet from this stupid climate change, which doesn't exist as they claim that it does.
And by the way, Chuck, they're also pushing policies in some cities and counties and states have already said you can't have natural gas in your home. We won't even put the pipe to your house. So you can't have a natural gas furnace, can't have a natural gas stove, can't have a natural gas water heater. And if you say, well, what do you expect me to heat my home with or heat our water with? You say, well, you're going to do that with electricity. Well, what happens when the power goes out? Well, you're going to sit in the dark and rue the day that you ever voted for these people. That's meteorologist Chuck Weiss joining us. Chuck, thank you very much. And I'll tell you what, with Chuck's permission, I'll post the entire post that he put up where he goes into great scientific detail about why this is happening. It's not global warming. It has happened before. It happened over half a century ago before Al Gore ever thought up and invented the thing that made him so much money. Glad to be with you on a Monday. Always glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Naysayers go to the head of the line, and I might have one coming up next. You're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars, he's uncensorable. Get ready. Here's Lars Larson. When you can fry an egg on the sidewalk.
I'm making breakfast. You want some eggs?
When your AC is on 24 hours a day.
I am begging you, put the air conditioner on.
And when your legs stick to the seats of your car.
No, I can't feel my legs.
It's too damn hot. You know why? Global warming. Allegedly. This is the Global Warming Minute on the Lars Larson Show.
It's Global Warming Day.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. As we always promise to start with naysayers, and I had planned to talk about some global warming issues here in just a moment. Christy, though, is a naysayer. Christy, welcome to the program. What do you and I disagree about on this fine Monday?
Well, Lars, are you familiar with Title 43, RCW 43.37?
Is that Revised Code of Washington 43? What about it?
43.37.
I don't have the revised codes of Washington or Oregon memorized. Why don't you share with me and the audience what it's about?
Weather modification. Hmm. And I mean, if you just look at the sun when the sky is blue, and you see all those clouds leaving big, huge chemtrails over the sun. And then they do it in the evening on the other side. I watch it every day.
Mm-hmm.
I photograph it. I send it all over the internet. I'm not the only one.
RCW 43, at least in the state of Washington.
No. It's RCW 43.37, Title 43, Executive Order from Jay Inslee.
Hmm. And
I've already sent it to Peter Urbano.
About weather modification.
Weather modification.
Yeah. And what do you think?
Authorization of cloud seeding.
Oh, okay. And in that case, you believe that the government is modifying the weather?
Oh, I think that this state didn't just pass a law and not use it. Why would Governor Inslee pass a law and then not use it?
I don't know of any good reason for that. Apparently, it does have to do with weather modification, allowing people to do
experiments. Yeah, and they did it in 2019, actually. They passed the law in 2019, and when everyone was supposed to be home on COVID, it rained every single day. So I started investigating the laws, the RCWs, and I found in 2013, they gutted an old bill from 2013, and they put all that crap in it in 2019. COVID, when no one was around. I sent it to Peter Urbano.
I'm not saying it's not happening. I'm not saying it's not happening, but what do you and I disagree about? You told the producer you were a naysayer.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't believe what that guy said at all. I don't believe it at all. I think that they are making it. If you watch, all you have to do is look up. I mean, anyone that has eyes to see can look up and see airplanes leaving these huge trails, these trails that get bigger and bigger and bigger, and then the sky turns completely white.
And then you think all of the weather we're experiencing right now is as a result of weather modification by the state? Hold on, let me finish my question, Christy. It's a result of what the state
weather
of Washington. Okay, very good, Christy. I appreciate the call. Thank you very much. I don't tend to agree with her, but that's fine. It's there. If one state can change the weather for the entire country, then that's an interesting phenomenon. Let's go to Tom in Coos Bay. Hey, Tom, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Yeah, Lars, I'm a hydroelectric plant mechanic. I'm retired. I worked at Orville Dam. I worked at San Luis Dam. I worked in the Edmonton, the biggest pumping plant in the world that goes over to LA for the Tehachapi, and Harvey O, which is in the Delta. And the Delta, they pump it into the California Aqueduct, which goes over 200 miles.
Right.
Because
they built Los Angeles in the middle of a desert. I appreciate your background. We're close to the break at the top. What's the point you wanted to make?
Well, the point I'm making is all this water shortages is nuts. All they got to do is turn on the pumps. And the San Francisco Bay, you know, the tide goes up and down, so you only have a three-hour window of low tide that the fresh water is flushed in from the Sacramento River, and that's when they usually pump. Well, now they're saying the Delta smelt and this and that, and they're just making the environmentalists who aren't elected are the ones running the place.
I agree with you there completely, Tom. If you've taken a trip down the Central Valley of California, it used to be lush with farms, and it's not anymore because years ago they said, we can't give you the water to the human farmers because we have to save the Delta smelt. I think that was foolish. It was stupid. And sadly, we've given the government the authority to do all these things, and mostly through the judges and the courts who have said you have to save the water. Same thing's happening in the Klamath Basin, where to save a sucker fish that nobody actually, well, I guess the tribes catch one or two, literally one or two fish a year, and they say for that, we have to cut off all the water that we would ordinarily give to the farmers, which was the agreement they made. There are lots of examples of that. What do we do about it?
Well, you got to get rid of these environmentalists' nut job. They're not elected. It's not their job to run the state. But
I agree.
That's what's going on. And also, the state is paying farmers not to plant. And they're giving the water rights. They're selling the water rights, which they're not getting. I mean, it's just a complete...
Well, I don't know about selling it, because in most cases, they just waste it. I mean, the tribes control a lot of the rights, the water rights, for places like the Klamath Basin. In California, in the Central Valley, they're saying we have to flush all this fresh water out so that we save the Delta smelt. But the water is then just wasted. It's turned into the single most plentiful resource on Earth, which is salt water, which is more or less useless. You can't do a whole lot with it except float boats on it. Tom, thanks for the call. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. You're listening to the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails, but let me do that in just a moment. I want to talk about a story involving a person who teaches at a school. And the indoctrination of kids, which is a subject we've been talking about probably more in the last year than we ever have before. And why? Because there seems to be a full court effort to press some kind of indoctrination, in many cases different kinds of indoctrination, on kids in government-run public schools, which is one of the reasons that so many parents have been fleeing from the government schools. Not only are their kids not being well served in those schools, too many kids drop out, they're bored, they're not challenged, and too many kids who stay don't make the minimum marks. But then you get this element. The same schools that will tell you all day long and twice on Sunday that they don't have the resources to be able to teach kids how to read, write, do math, maybe something on social studies, geography, science of one kind or another. They'll tell you, we don't have time to do that stuff. You know, the stuff that would actually make a difference for a child who graduates from an American school and wants to go on to either college or a job or some other vocation. No, these same schools will tell you, while they don't have the time to teach the things your kids actually need, And this is one I'd be glad to take a naysayer on, because, you know, we always put naysayers to the head of the line at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. They'll say, we have to teach your kids about LGBTQ+. That is something they have to know. Now, if there's a parent out there who says, why, my child's life would not be complete. They can skip the math. They can skip the writing. They can skip science and geography and social studies and everything else. As long as my kid knows about lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, questioning, inquiring, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. In fact, there's now one called SPIRIT, which means something entirely different. The acronym just keeps getting longer and longer and longer. And if you have any acquaintances or friends or coworkers who are gay, they'll probably tell you they're sick to death of the fact that their movement, which started out with lesbian and gay, has now been hijacked by people with an entirely different agenda. But they'll also tell you your kids absolutely have to know about critical race theory. They have to know that if you have white skin, then you're a bad person. You're part of the oppressor class that has created and maintained systemic racism. You can't see it, you can't feel it, you can't hear it, you can't measure it, but it's out there. It's kind of like fairy dust. Then you've got this. What about religion? And if you say to yourself, well, Lars, they've long ago banned religion from the public schools. When it comes to the Christian religion, the predominant religion in the United States of America, the religion that was the basis of the founding for this country, I'd agree with you. Except that other religions, even minority religions, end up getting the kind of attention you never would expect Protestantism or Catholicism to get in the public schools. So I get this email from a young lady, Susan Soler. And she said, Lars, I work in the cafeteria of a school, and I'm a long-term employee of the Hillsborough School District 1J. An email was sent out to all staff on June the 10th to notify all staff that a class on Muslims and Islam would be taught in school in the library and that the library was closed for the event. I was on my break, and I decided to enter the library to see what the class was about. I videotaped for a few moments, and I interacted with the professor or imam regarding his slideshow and curriculum. The middle school teacher walked me out while defending the presentation. I went back to the kitchen to resume my duties. She works in the kitchen. And the school, I might have said she's a teacher. She actually works in the kitchen. And the school principal took me to his office. As I was unable to reach a union member to attend the meeting desired by the principal then escorted me out of the building. A future meeting is being planned. How do I find out if this presentation is a violation of the separation of church and state, signed Susan. Well, then she wrote to me later and said that she has now been suspended from her job. Now, I know that some of you might say, well, that's good. She shouldn't be asking those kinds of questions. Frankly, I think the questions she's asking are exactly the right questions, because at the same time or during some of the same period in which the Christian religion is pushed out of schools altogether. My view on it is the government-run public schools should either teach all of the religions as a subject or teach none of the religions as a subject. The fact that we have a, it's like George Orwell's Animal Farm, where they said all of the animals on the farm were equal. Some were just more equal than others. It was a way of saying kind of what I say when I say that Democrats and liberals have to have double standards, because if they didn't have double standards, they wouldn't have any standards at all. Because for a long, long time, we've been told you can't have the Bible in school. You can't pray in school. You cannot have anything that is based on Christianity in school, which, you know, whether you like it or not, you're going to have to kick the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence and many of the statements made by the founders of this country, like Washington and Jefferson and Madison and Monroe. The fact is you have to kick all those things out because the founders of this country believed in Christianity, and they incorporated so much of it in the bedrock principles of this country. They also, at the same time, I might point out, said, we're not a theocracy. We are a country where every single person has a constitutional right, a God-given right, to practice whatever religion they want, or no religion at all, and the government is not allowed to have a say in that, right? Government can't tell the citizens what to do. Can the citizens go to the government and say, listen, my beliefs say that I'm allowed to do this? Yes, it can go that direction. What cannot happen is the government is not supposed to be involved in telling you whether or not to practice a religion and what is the religion to practice. And you can understand very well why the founders of the country believed in that, because they just came out of England, where you were either an adherent to the Church of England or you were on the outs with the government. The government was a Christian-based religion, but it was not one that was friendly to anybody who didn't believe as the Church of England believed. And as a result of that, I mean, to the point where the Church of England or the government of England actually murdered people, 300 people, for having the temerity to translate the Bible into English, which they called the vulgar tongue back at that point, and it's gotten more vulgar all the time. But the idea that the public schools can have classes on Islam and classes on Muslims, that they can teach the five pillars of Islam to kids, but you can't teach the Ten Commandments to kids, that should strike you as wrong. If I'd love to hear the naysayer who explains to me how you can teach the five pillars of Islam, but you can't teach the Ten Commandments. Now that would be a great naysayer. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@larslarson.com. Coming up next on the Radio Northwest Network, over the weekend, sellout Republicans like Mitt Romney announced they have a deal on a new gun law that threatens to take your civil rights without adding any security. We'll be back.
This morning, I was flying back from Washington, D.C., where I spent most of last week, including some amount of time with Senator Murphy. And I sat there on the plane today thinking about the importance of this, and I was crying. Because you know what? Maybe had this been done a few years ago, my daughter would be alive today, and so many others would have been saved.
That is Fred Gutenberg, whose daughter was murdered 4 years ago at a high school in Parkland, Florida. Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High. 17 students murdered 4 years ago. Welcome to the Lars Larson Show. Pleasure to be with you. Always glad to get your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. You can send emails to talk@larslarson.com. Vote in our Twitter poll at Lars Larson Show, and that's on Twitter. And if you don't like Twitter, go to my website. It's larslarson.com. And welcome to the Radio Northwest Network, serving the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho for the past 22 and a half years. About Fred Gutenberg, I cannot imagine the pain that that father has because of the loss of his daughter to a murderer 4 years ago in Florida. But I completely disagree that anything the United States Congress is doing on guns would have made any difference here at all in violent crime in America. And let me tell you why. Over the weekend, we heard news that the Democrats, who are absolutely beside themselves, trying to come up with something they can say to America, because the economy is failing. Joe Biden is failing. Things are going wrong six ways from Sunday. And I think for political reasons and for political reasons only, the Democrats are desperate to come up with something that they can do. So they said a couple of weeks ago, we're going to pass a gun bill. We're going to ban this. We're going to ban that. We're going to change ages. We're going to do all these various things. And over the weekend came word that a bunch of sellout Republicans like Mitt Romney and others, about 10 of them in the Senate, said they would get on board and vote for this crazy bill. And what's really notable about it, and I'll get into some of the details here in just a moment, but take a listen to this. Senator Pat Toomey, who's a Democrat from Pennsylvania, he was asked specifically, so what the heck is inside this deal that you've come up with the Republicans that you have the votes in the Senate to actually get past the filibuster? Listen to what he says about that bill.
There's not that much really that I can tell you at this point, except to say that we are making progress. You have men and women from both sides of the aisle who are negotiating in good faith. There are a number of items that are on the table. I think the odds modestly favor us getting something done. And actually, this is the first time in 10 years I've felt that way. So Yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic.
Cautiously optimistic about a proposal that we were told this week, and we've got a deal. Well, what does the deal involve? Well, we don't have the details worked out. I want you to compare this. I mean, since most of I'm not a U.S. senator, never will be, have no interest. Most citizens have never been a state lawmaker. They've never been a member of Congress. If you came home tonight and told your wife, I've got a great deal to get a new job, or told your husband, I've got a great deal. I'm going to get a new job. And your wife said, well, what is the job? You said, well, I really don't know. That's one of the details we haven't worked out. Well, what does it pay? Well, we haven't worked that out either. Well, is it here or is it across the country? Well, we don't have that detail either, but it's a really, really great job. I just can't tell you what I'm going to be doing, what I'm going to make, or where I have to work. Now, if your husband or wife came home and said, hey, I'm going to buy a new car. It's such a great deal. I'm going to get a new car. You say, well, how much is it going to cost? Don't have that worked out yet. How much is it going to cost us every month? Don't have that worked out. What kind of car is it? No, we don't have the details yet, but it's fantastic. You would think that they were crazy. This gun bill is two things at the same time. It is a joke because of what little we know about what's inside of it. In a lot of ways, it sounds like a Nancy Pelosi special. If you remember when she famously or infamously said, we'll have to pass the bill to find out what's inside of it. It's that kind of deal. Now, what we do know is they say, well, first of all, we're going to encourage states to have red flag laws. These are the laws that violate people's constitutional rights because they say the government, a judge, can order the police to come and take all your firearms and you don't get notified. You don't get a chance to have any say-so whatsoever. You don't get a court hearing. You don't get to be represented by a lawyer. You won't even know it happens or it's happening until the police show up at your doorstep. You say, well, that doesn't sound constitutional. There's some due process missing from that. Exactly. But what the Congress wants to do is they say provide funding as an incentive for states to enact red flag laws so that we can confiscate the property of citizens without justifying it and without giving them due process or a chance to object and say, none of these things you're saying about me are true. That's one piece. Then they say they were going to try to pass a bill that would raise the minimum wage to buy a semi-automatic rifle, any semi-automatic rifle, from 18 to 21. Well, they decided they couldn't quite, they could get it passed in the House barely, but they knew it wasn't going to get through the Senate. So what they're proposing is, they say, we have to apply extra checks to everybody between the ages of 18 and 21. So even though at 18 you're an American citizen adult, you have full constitutional rights, but you can't buy a gun until we do some extra checks. Extra checks on what? Well, we want to look at your medical records and your psychiatric records. We want to know things that are locked up by law behind HIPAA. You say, well, can you actually do that? And I would say, no, actually, you probably can't do that. There are a couple of other changes they want to make as well. And none of the changes would actually do anything to have changed what happened in the last few weeks in Uvalde, Texas, in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and in Buffalo, New York. But they don't care. They want to be able to go to voters and say, by the way, we passed a gun bill. We've addressed this violent crime thing. The Republicans who are backing it up, John Cornyn of Texas, sounds like he's a rhino. Roy Blunt of Missouri, Richard Burr of North Carolina, Bill Cassidy of Louisiana, Susan Collins, of course, she's been a rhino for a long time. Lindsey Graham, who can't be trusted with anything, from South Carolina. Rob Portman of Ohio, and the usual suspect, Mitt Romney of Utah. And then, of course, Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania, Republican. I might have said Democrat earlier. He's actually a Republican, but not much of one. And Tom Tillis of North Carolina. Four of them are retiring after their current term. Not one of them is facing re-election this year. So I guess they figure, I can vote for this pile of nonsense. I can say that I support it, even though, just like Pat Toomey said, he doesn't even know what's inside the bill. And he says, but we're cautiously optimistic that we're going to back something, and we don't even know what it is we're backing. Again, a Nancy Pelosi deal. And if anybody in the mainstream media is going to actually pose the question, would any of this have changed the events in Texas, in Oklahoma, in New York State? The answer to that is no. But it doesn't have to. All they want to do is appear to be doing the right thing. And as long as you appear to be doing the right thing, whether you actually change the situation or not, doesn't apparently matter to them at all. Your calls are welcome at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com and vote in our Twitter poll at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I would think it would concern anyone if a string of attacks on a particular institution anywhere in America could be connected together and look as though there was a concerted effort to do something against that institution. Now, the reason I say it obliquely that way, imagine if we had a series of attacks on black churches or predominantly black churches. You'd say that's crazy. We'd have to go after it, investigate it, find the people behind it. What if it was an attack on a number of synagogues? You'd say, well, we need to go after that, especially if it's being done as some kind of concerted effort driven toward a particular group or individuals. Well, I think that's been happening over the last about 6 weeks. There have been 23, I may have the count low, but 23 attacks on what are called pregnancy resource centers. And I've explained to you, pregnancy resource centers, which I support, do one of the most sympathetic things you can imagine. They do not kill a baby. They say to a young lady who's pregnant, why, you can go ahead and have that child. And if the woman says, but I'm financially in trouble and I don't have the resources to be able to care for this child, they say, we will help you have that child. You can keep it and love it. You can give it up for adoption. It is your choice at that point. All an abortion clinic does is say, we'd be happy to terminate that pregnancy. So pregnancy resource centers of various kinds throughout America offer just that service. They offer up to that young lady some help during a time that she may find troubling. Reverend James Harden is the CEO of Compass Care Pregnancy Services, owner of the Pregnancy Resource Center in New York that was firebombed last week. Reverend Harden, welcome to the program.
It's an honor to be with you today. Thanks for having me.
What should Americans make of the fact that we've now had almost two dozen of these, unless I'm low on that count, two dozen of these centers throughout the country, around the country, have been attacked in one way or another?
Well, the leak of the SCOTUS draft reversing Roe sparked a pro-abortion crime wave. That's what this is. And it's against peaceful pro-life pregnancy centers. I mean, the brutal of all of them was an attack on Compass Care's Buffalo medical office. It was not an attack on Compass Care as much as it was an attack on women who seriously need ethical medical care and comprehensive support in their hour of crisis. And we had to, this bombing essentially created additional hardships on these women having to travel 60 miles to Rochester, be rerouted to our other facility out there. But we were able to get another facility up and running the very next day after the firebombing in a secure location. So you know what? Women are continuing to receive the care they need. You know, when a woman faces an unplanned pregnancy, she says, I'm stuck. I'm trapped. I've got no other choice. I need to have an abortion. And Compass Care's mission is to erase the need for abortion by transforming her fear into confidence. And we do that by giving her a vision of her future after having had a child, giving her all the support and the security that she needs in order to have her baby for free. And you know what? This is breaking today. Governor Hochul, New York Governor Hochul.
I was going to get to that, Reverend. This is stunning because Hochul is the accidental governor of New York State, because the previous governor resigned in disgrace. Rather than say, I'm going to go out and make sure we find the evil people who've done this, she's doubled down on the attack through the legislature, hasn't she?
Can you believe it? It is unjust. The injustice is the irony. Everything is just so thick. It's ridiculous. I mean, she has yet, including the Biden administration, they refuse to denounce the violence against pro-life pregnancy centers. They're only providing security to organizations that happen to agree with their abortion policy. It's shameful, and they need to be held accountable.
By the way, Reverend, I'm sorry to interrupt. We're both on the same page, so my audience knows that I'm pro-life. You're pro-life. But just to explain, I looked at the bill online. The bill that she is signing, that Governor Hochul of New York is signing, says we will investigate whether these pregnancy resource centers like Compass Care have said are getting in the way of women getting comprehensive, what they call comprehensive medical care. And I thought, Reverend, let me ask you a couple of simple questions. Does a Compass Care pregnancy service, do you have any way to forbid a woman to get an abortion?
Of course not.
Do you have any, do you tell the woman, if you get our help, you must keep that baby and care for it after it's born?
Not in a million years.
Now, do you say, if you have the baby and we help you out, you must give it up for adoption? Do you do that?
Never, never.
So a woman could come to you and consult with you, and you could offer her the help, and she could still say, you know, not for me, walk down the road to Planned Parenthood and kill that baby, couldn't she?
She could.
And yeah. And I imagine you probably, sadly, have some people who do exactly that, don't you?
Fairly often. It just so happens that most of the time when a woman feels supported and secure, she has her baby. And that's what abortionists won't do for her. They're profiteering. They're only interested in getting the money. They're not. What abortion represents is abandonment. We don't want to help you. We don't want to come alongside you. True community, like what Compass Care provides, walks with women, not just now, but all the way through her pregnancy and beyond. We give her comprehensive community support, but what she absolutely needs in order to say no to abortion, she doesn't feel like she can say no. She's got her circumstances are coercing her, and she's not truly free. Well, if we can give her all the support here that she needs after her first 75-minute appointment at Compass Care, she can walk out of here saying, I see now how I can do it. Now, all of a sudden, she's got a true choice.
And, you know, Reverend, I've often thought, I've been in the news business for a long, 47 years, and I've told people we do stories on virtually everything. When I was a reporter, we did stories on everything in the world. I mean, there's almost not a subject. I have never seen a story where they talk to women and say, you had an abortion 10, 20, 30 years ago. Has that affected you adversely? You know, has it weighed on you? And I'm willing to bet there are women who never give it another thought, maybe. And there are probably women who think for the rest of their lives, what could have happened if I had had that baby? Good things.
Yeah.
And you stay with these women after they've had the baby. Planned Parenthood takes its money, kills the baby, and sends the woman down the road, and that's the end of it.
That's right. That's exactly what happens. The original Hippocratic Oath stated, I will not give a woman an abortive remedy. And the reason why it said that is because the purpose of medicine is to heal and to maintain the health of the patient. And when a doctor is serving a pregnant woman, he's serving two patients. Abortion does neither one of those two things for either the woman or the child. Abortion is classic quackery. Always has been, always will be. No self-respecting physician would ever do an abortion.
Well, and doctor, Reverend, the crazy thing about this is many times doctors may have to go to a woman who's pregnant and say, listen, this pregnancy is endangering your health. And I've talked to women who've had that kind of diagnosis, and the doctor says, you know, if you really want to make sure you stay alive, you may have to abandon this baby. And sometimes women do that. But sometimes women say, know what? I'm not doing it. I'm keeping my baby, and I'm going to, and there are great success stories out of that. As you say, the doctor is serving both of them, and he sometimes has to tell them, these are the risks that you're up against, your age, your other conditions that may affect how a pregnancy is going to affect you, but he gives the woman the options. Planned Parenthood does not say, you know, you could have this baby and give it up for adoption, do they?
No. I mean, most of the women that go to Planned Parenthood end up having an abortion. That is their business model. Planned Parenthood is the largest abortion provider on the globe. And they're changing their whole pattern. If Roe versus Wade is overturned, you and I both know abortion does not go away. It simply moves to New York and California. And so they're going to have a hub and spoke model, flying women from all over the country into these abortion hubs. New York Governor Hochul and California Governor Newsom have promised to pay for their travel expenses and their abortions through taxpayer money. And we've got a plan. We've been working a plan since 2018. To complete the abolition of Roe and remaining abortion hub states when they go to this abortion hub.
I'm so glad to hear it. Reverend James Harden, the CEO of Compass Care Pregnancy Services, firebombed last week, one of 23 attacks around America. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio. Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Our Twitter poll today, would your kids benefit from getting mental health days that they could take off from school and classes? I think it's nuts. Kids in Washington state schools are now going to get mental health days. Oregon already has the law on the books. I think it's absolutely foolish, especially for Oregon, which notoriously has the shortest school year in America. And then you're going to tell kids, hey, here's another excuse for skipping school, staying home and playing Xbox. So would your kids benefit from getting a mental health day or more than one to take off from school and classes? I would say no. You can vote any way you like. You find it at Lars Larson Show or at LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. And if you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here at 866-439-5277. Naysayers go to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. Hey, Michael, you're a naysayer. What do you and I disagree about today?
Oh, Michael. Cool. Hello, Lars. How are you doing?
Yes.
So I'm calling in because the lady that called earlier about the chemtrails, the spraying up in the skies.
Yep.
So I did a bunch of research in the past about this, just out of curiosity. It was created in the 1960s by the Army, called cloud seeding, where they could come in, spray, and then create cloud cover so bombers wouldn't be seen coming in.
Yep.
Later, it turned into what's known as geoengineering. Every year around the world, there's a huge consortium of different people that come to this meeting. There are private companies that can do it. Saudi Arabia uses it quite a bit to create rain. But on
when they have moisture,
Right. So on a bigger conspiratorial level, it's happening worldwide, mostly over NATO countries. They're C-130s, they're gray and red. They're about 60,000 feet up, so about 30,000 feet above commercial airlines. A lot of people have the confusion between what are called chemtrails and what are called contrails. Contrails is the ice crystals that form off the wings of commercial airlines, usually goes away within just a few inches after the plane passes.
Can I drop in just one fact you may not have factored in? You say they're at 60,000 feet. The service ceiling for an AC-130 is 26,000 feet, less than half that height. How do they get to 60,000 feet when the airplane will only go to 26?
That's a good question. From what I hear, a lot of them are actually drone aircraft. They're not even flown by people, so I don't know if that makes a difference.
They're drone C-130s that will fly to 60,000 feet?
Well, or they're aircraft that are at a much higher altitude. Let me maybe 60,000.
Well, because I don't say that's like SR-22 Blackbirds. There are some aircraft that will go that high, but they don't go that high carrying very much. So what is your theory? I mean, I'm not saying cloud seeding hasn't been done. It's certainly, I mean, I remember reading about it when I was in high school. But what are you saying they're doing with it? They being the government, I guess.
So I have spoken with the Air Force base up there in Washington. I also spoke with the FAA here at the Eugene Airport and the tower, and also had a long conversation with the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, and that was the biggest conversation.
Okay, but tell us what you heard, because just telling us a list of the agencies you've talked to, tell us what you heard.
Right. So I spoke to the captain of the aerial spray programs for the Northwest, and he said, we don't have any current spray programs going on. I can't confirm or deny what that is. And that was somewhat the extent. He just said, it's not us. When I spoke to the FAA, which is the tower at Eugene, she looked out the tower at the same grid system in the sky at the same time I'm looking at it. I said, do you see those lines? Can you tell me what they are? She said, yes, I acknowledge them, but I cannot comment on them. And then when I spoke to the Department of Environmental Quality, the individual I spoke with, he said he's gotten numerous calls about it, but he was willing to take mine because I was articulate, patient, and not freaking out.
But you're not giving us any info. You're just telling all the people you talked to who couldn't tell you what was going on, right? So what should we make of that?
Lars, that's what makes it so interesting. Nobody's talking about it, even though they'll confirm that, yes, it is happening, but we can't talk about it.
Well, they're confirming. They're saying they can't tell you what the kind. Now, I got to tell you something, Michael. As long as I've been on the air, I've had calls occasionally about chemtrails. And I've said, well, my understanding is it's ice crystals from the exhaust from the planes, because as you burn jet fuel, it does produce a certain amount of moisture. Well, why is it there are chemtrails, as people call them, on some days and not on others. Some of it has to do with temperature. Some of it has to do with winds aloft. Some of it has to do with humidity. Has to do with a lot of different factors about why some aircraft make contrails and some do not. What do you believe? What do you believe?
Is Mars to answer that?
Well, yeah, go ahead.
So apparently it's barium and aluminum chaff, and that's why they're at such high altitudes, because ionically, when they spray those metal filaments, it creates water droplets around the metal, which then becomes what we see as the clouds and the rain. There was an excellent investigative documentary done in 2010 called
Michael, I want you to tell. See, here's the thing. My audience wants to hear your opinion and what you found, not just recommendations, go watch this or go read this, okay?
Okay.
In other words,
you want my direct answer?
Yeah, I want your answer. That's what that's what talk radio is about, is what you think.
All roads lead to the CFR, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Rockefellers, Rothschilds, Henry Kissinger. If you learn more about this, you can use the study. Yes, I can reference, but you don't want me to do that.
Well, no, I don't mind if you reference a study, but calling into a show and saying, if you'll read all this stuff, you'll know all the things. I don't mind. I do my own research as well. What's that?
I don't have so much time here.
Well, I understand that, and I wanted them to hear what you had to say, but now we're up against the top. 3 minutes, didn't get much out of it, but, Michael, I appreciate the call. 866-439-5277. Come back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Monday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, proudly serving the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho with honestly provocative talk on a daily basis. Now, I want to mention something. You know that our main studios are in downtown Portland. The National Weather Service has now issued a flood watch for the Columbia River from Portland to southwest Washington all the way through Wednesday afternoon of this week. So it seemed like a perfect time. Actually, it was accidental timing that we talked to Washington State Senator Mark Schessler about the idea of ripping out four Snake River dams. Senator, welcome back to the program. Isn't this a great idea? $27 billion, maybe it'll be more than that, to tear out four dams that provide cheap energy and clean energy, transportation, recreation, irrigation, and all the rest, and at the same time that part of the region is facing a flood watch because we can't hold enough water back. Senator, welcome.
Well, great to be back. You know, it's not widely publicized, but when we're in flood conditions, the word goes out to those four Snake River dams, please hold some water back. It's not the total solution, but it's one part of it that many people forget. Even after the historic Portland floods, their memories are short.
Yeah, they are. And what people don't realize is they think of a dam as, well, you can just hold back all the water. Well, each one of the dams can only hold back so much. They can only release so much. But if you've got four extra dams and each one holds a few feet times all those acres of water behind them, you can hold a whole bunch of water back. Now, again, there are limits on how much you can hold back. But having four fewer of them, that would actually put the region at greater risk of flooding, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would. It's an amazing system we've developed through the Northwest. Why anyone wouldn't appreciate it is really hard to fathom.
Well, and in fact, there are other places in this state where we could use a few dams to do some flood control. There are parts of central Washington up the I-5 corridor that seem to flood almost every year to some extent, some years worse, some years better. But you say, why don't they put some dams on those rivers? And the answer is the environmentalists don't want a single dam on a single river, do they?
No, that's true. Many of them don't believe we should have any Snake or Columbia River dams, and yet they don't tell us where affordable hydropower comes from as a replacement.
I've had a few people, Senator Schessler, who said to me, well, you know, but it's just an idea right now. Well, it's an idea that Jay Inslee ordered that there be a study to put a price tag on it. I'm not sure the price tag truly reflects the cost, but $27 billion to destroy a multi-billion dollar asset, is there any possible chance that this is going to be taken seriously and actually come to be?
Well, once upon a time, we didn't think it could happen. But with the radicals in charge in both Washingtons, you have to take the threat very seriously. And just the cost of it, if you have to do it, think of trying to get a permit from every tribe to build the highways, the railroads, the energy facilities. All it would take Just think of tribes and government bureaucrats permitting all of this. It's a nightmare.
Well, it is, except that, Senator, one of the things I've always understood is that if you have a government program and all those entities that are involved, don't they all see an opportunity? Well, out of that $27 billion, or maybe it'll be $30 billion, we know we'll get a certain percentage of it. In other words, when they talk about removing a dam, they say, well, we'll have to ameliorate the effects of this, so this tribe will get a little chunk of money and that tribe will get some and this city and that city. In other words, I think most of the governments you just named see opportunities in the destruction that they're proposing.
Well, it's an opportunity for bureaucrats, but a nightmare for our ratepayers and the average taxpayer.
Could all of this also happen, Senator, during a time when all you can hear, when it comes to energy, all the government officials want to talk about is clean and green energy? Well, all four of those dams represent a lot of clean, green energy. And you say, so we're going to spend money to get rid of clean, green energy at a time when that's all you folks want to talk about?
Well, here's a quote from a constituent that just came in today. During the Obama administration, this faculty member at a well-known university said, world demand needs 150 square meters each second for 20 years to meet the world's energy demands. This is a faculty member at a well-known university giving the facts of what it would take. Now, this gentleman said he supports renewable power, but to believe that this is all going to come from solar or wind is just a fantasy.
Well, and you notice that where the cleanest and the greenest power you can find is really dams. And we've had what we're coming up on 100 years of experience here not too long from now. But nobody ever proposes, well, maybe we should get some more hydropower out there. I hear people say it generically, but I say, show me a place where you could ever get away with putting a dam across a river anymore. I don't think it's very likely, is it?
Well, I can tell you, when Derek Sanderson, our director of ag, worked for the Office of Columbia River, he tried every little spot in eastern Washington for storage and generation and just came up short.
Well, and the other thing that occurs to me is, Senator, we're watching California go through some real trials right now because they're short of water. And yet when I talk to the hydrologists, they tell me, well, yeah, it's short of water in a given year, and they'll go through 5, 6, 7 years where they're short of water, and then they'll have 5, 6, 7 years where they're long for water, but they have no way to hold it back. If they had a way to store it, you could actually take the low years and the high years, put them together, and you get a nice way of supporting what they've got going on, where the low years are made up for by all the years where you got more water than you know what to do with, and you spill it all.
Well, it's been over 40 years since the last dam was completed, but our population has grown, our water needs have grown, and yet we've added nothing. So adding storage, adding hydropower certainly beats the alternatives.
Yeah, it sure does. So what's the best way for the people listening to this not to be the victims of it, but to be able to fight back and say, we don't want these dams torn out, because most of us are not in the state legislature like you are?
Well, the online comments are at this email address. I'll go slowly.
Sure.
www.lsrdoptions.org.
LSRD.
That's where you can comment us on this absurdity.
Well, we've got it, and I'll be happy to send it to anybody who wants it. But I want people to comment it. The next question is, does Olympia, just like Salem or Boise, do they pay any attention to what the citizens say?
Well, not under the current regime, but I believe we're going to see some changes in November for the better, because the taxpayer has been getting mugged long enough, and it's got to stop. And the propaganda that's driving them, one is the number of spring Chinook salmon. What's wrong with this is our numbers are up tens of thousands from last year. In fact, about 20,000 over average.
Absolutely right. That's Senator Mark Schessler from Washington State Legislature, who represents District 9 in Washington State. We'll be back in a moment. I've got a few things to say about the January 6th committee and their latest. Welcome
and
back.
This. Donald Trump now, quote, clings to more fantastical theories. such as Dinesh D'Souza's debunked 2,000 mules, even as recounts in Arizona, Georgia, and Wisconsin confirm Trump lost.
Now, that's Representative Liz Cheney, a so-called Republican who has now been disowned by the Republican Party in her own home state of Wyoming. And welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Pleasure to be with you. Always glad to get your phone calls and your emails. I wanted to tell you a couple of things about the latest from the Dog and Pony Show, known as the January 6th Committee, and then I'll get to your phone calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Naysayers go to the head of the line. You can send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And, of course, you can vote in our Twitter poll. Find that two places, at Lars Larson Show. And if you don't like Twitter, go to my website at LarsLarson.com. I watched the January 6th so-called hearing that happened last week, and I told you about my take on it on Friday. Nothing much new that came out of it at all, except that now, over the weekend, we've heard, well, you know, the committee has the possibility, and they think it's growing stronger, that they want to bring criminal charges against Donald Trump. This really is the third impeachment trial of Donald Trump. They desperately want to keep this man from running for public office. And why? Because all of the polling indicates that he's a slam dunk, solid choice by the GOP, that he will get the nomination. And they also know that Joe Biden is failing fast right in front of them. So they've got to pull something out to try to show people that they can take this guy out of the picture altogether, because they know they can't beat him at the polls, even if they cheat. And I think they're likely to cheat. So they bring up people like William Barr, the former attorney general under Donald Trump. I never really understood this guy. When he was attorney general, he didn't seem to do a lot of the things that a lot of us expected that he would do. And I mean expected, because when you're the attorney general, you should go after criminal wrongdoing. But now they're using Bill Barr, who, it seems to me, is more interested in preserving his own political future and his connections to powerful people by singing the same song that they're singing. So they got him to talk about January 6th and the days after, and Donald Trump's point of view that the 2020 election, November 3rd, was actually the result of fraud. Take a listen to where Barr talked about how Donald Trump was detached from reality.
And I was somewhat demoralized, because I thought, boy, if he really believes this stuff, he has, you know, lost contact he's become detached from reality, if he really believes this stuff. On the other hand, you know, when I went into this and would, you know, tell him how crazy some of these allegations were, there was never an indication of interest in what the actual facts were.
Now, I got to tell you something. You know my position on this is that November the 3rd, the election that happened, was illegitimate. And I don't say that as a Trump supporter. I am a Trump supporter. I say that because I saw what happened. We had states that did not have universal vote by mail, like California, that went ahead and sent out millions and millions, no exaggeration there, millions of ballots that were not legal under state law. And again, I think you have to be reminded, the U.S. Constitution says that we have an election every 4 years to choose a president. Now, who do they put in charge of that election? There are a few federal laws, but the bulk of what decides how your election is going to be conducted, that decision is made at the state level. Some states have almost no vote by mail, almost no absentee voting. Other states have universal vote by mail. And yet in the 2020 election, without changing the state laws, the powers that be in those states decided we're going to have vote by mail. And if you asked, well, don't you have to go to the legislature to do that? They said, no, we don't have to. We think it's necessary. And they used the pandemic as an excuse. Do you know there were a couple of dozen primary elections in states before the November 3rd general election that were conducted as poll votes, as state law said you had to conduct them as poll votes? And you say, well, can't the Secretary of State or the governor or a court or a judge decide to conduct an election some other way? And the short answer is no, you can't. What the Constitution says is that the only way you can change your state election laws is to call up your legislature. Have them meet in emergency session. If you really think a change is needed, then you call the legislature together. They do it for lesser reasons than deciding who's going to be the leader of the free world, the president of the United States, and you have them change the law. They didn't do that in most of those states. And then you have the 2000 Mules documentary that was done by our friend Dinesh D'Souza. And again, I've been honest with Dinesh. I think the documentary had some flaws because it didn't go far enough. I think they should have gone right to the attorneys general of the various states and said, here's the evidence. Will you go out and go after these people who acted as mules to deliver ballots in the dead of night? Ballots that were almost certainly faked ballots. It was not legitimate. 2000 Mules documented all of that. And yet you hear William Barr, as part of the testimony offered today for the January 6th committee, simply dismissing it out of hand without actually talking about, well, what was wrong with the documentary? It showed people tracked by their cell phones as they picked up ballots at various nonprofit groups, mostly funded by people like George Soros and Mark Zuckerberg, and delivered them at 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning, delivered dozens of ballots, snapping photos of each ballot. And they documented all of this. Take a listen now. Barr simply dismisses it.
My opinion then and my opinion now is that the election was not stolen by fraud. And I haven't seen anything since the election that changes my mind on that, including the 2000 Mules movie.
Well, except for the fact that most of the people, and I get lots of emails from people who say, well, they debunked that movie. I said, take a look at what the various news organizations said. They said, well, there could be other explanations. The 2000 Mules documentary, and I think it's well worth watching, I've watched it a couple of times, shows they had a pattern of people going in the dead of night, picking up ballots, and then for no reason that actually makes any sense at all, dropping them off at drop boxes. And these people, some of them, testified that they're told the documentary makers they were being paid to do all of this. Bill Barr acts as though, well, none of that is really a concern. But here's the final issue, and this is one of the issues you ought to consider. The Congress cannot indict Donald Trump. What they can do is they can send to the Attorney General Merrick Garland, who I don't think should be trusted because of his actions in office. He's done a lot of things like sick the DOJ and the FBI on parents who go to school board meetings and get too loud and call them domestic terrorists and things like that. Here's the problem. Merrick Garland's DOJ is already prosecuting a number of people, mostly from the Proud Boys, for seditious conspiracy. And if you say, well, that's exactly the charge Congress wants to bring against Donald Trump. Here's the problem. The DOJ is not suggesting that Donald Trump was part of the conspiracy. They haven't named him as an unindicted co-conspirator. They haven't charged him with it. And they're not even suggesting that those Proud Boys were actually driven to do what they did because Donald Trump told them to do it. So you got a real problem if Congress says, hey, Merrick Garland, charge this guy. And he says, I can't. It contradicts everything I'm doing right now. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'll be glad to get back to your phone calls, even naysayer calls, in just a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. I have to tell you, I always confess to you if I have a dog in the fight, I don't smoke cigarettes, never have. I mean, I've had a cigarette in my life, but I smoke cigars occasionally, that kind of thing. But I don't really have a dog in the fight on this one. But last week, as we were ending the week, I saw this story about how the Biden administration was going to be the nanny state that we all expected. In one more way, they were going to enact a rule, again, probably not through the Congress, but through the bureaucratic state, the deep state, that would require tobacco companies to minimize the amount of nicotine in cigarettes. And I've had people, when I tell them that, they say, why would you take the nicotine out of cigarettes? Isn't that one of the biggest things that drives people to smoke cigarettes? And I said, yes. And I would imagine my first thought was, well, if somebody is smoking cigarettes to get the nicotine, you know, the nic fix, then and you reduce the amount of nicotine in there, I would imagine the most human thing to do would be to say, well, I'm going to smoke two or three of them. Not because you plan to do it, because the first one doesn't satisfy. Now, I'm going to test that on Jeff Steyer, who's a senior fellow at the Consumer Choice Center. Jeff, welcome back to the program.
Good to be with you, Lars.
Have I analyzed this right? The Biden administration seems to think you can get people to quit smoking cigarettes by reducing the very thing in cigarettes that people are smoking them for?
Well, as you point out, people smoke for the nicotine, but, you know, they die from the tar. People are addicted to nicotine. Nicotine is addictive. We finally got everyone to agree about that. So what happened was Congress gave the FDA authority to regulate cigarettes back in 2009, and it set out how it can do so. It's been doing a poor job, but FDA is working on regulating these issues right now. But Congress made it very clear you can't zero out nicotine, because some people did want to lower nicotine in combustible cigarettes. They wanted to gradually lower it. And they realized, scientists, great scientists, worked on it and came up with what you just did. And they gave it a name, compensatory smoking. And because people will smoke more if you gradually reduce nicotine, Congress decided, let's not let FDA do that. And it was very clear, you can't even zero out nicotine. So what FDA is now doing is recognizing the idea that there's a problem with this plan to lower nicotine. What Congress has said is we're going to lower nicotine to almost nothing, so much that it's no longer addictive, that it no longer satisfies addiction. Basically zeroing it out, which Congress said you can't do. So FDA, with a wink and a nod, is saying we're going to do it within the law and make it almost zero.
I mean, Jeff, the part about this where they say they want to reduce it to what they call non-addictive levels. I'm not a scientist. Is there a level at which nicotine is not addictive?
Could you imagine if the industry came out with a cigarette that it said was not addictive? The FDA would lose its mind. But the FDA is talking about such low levels of nicotine. In fact, there is one cigarette now on the market with FDA's backing that's got almost no nicotine. I'm betting you haven't heard of it because nobody wants it.
Okay. And it's out there.
Product, but the FDA isn't satisfied with that. They want to take away cigarettes, which we all know are so harmful, and they want to basically ban the cigarette without Congress agreeing to it. Congress basically said you can't do that. So FDA said, oh, we're going to figure out a way to do it that actually doesn't cause compensatory smoking, which is you're not going to even want this cigarette because there's no nicotine in it. Almost no nicotine in it is what they're saying. This will not pass the courts, and it will also create a black market of the type we have not seen before because nicotine is so addictive. And the sad thing is there's such a much easier solution, which is to authorize, and the FDA has been very slow to this, authorize products that do have nicotine but don't have tar, the ones
right.
that are less harmful.
Well, hold on, Jeff. Cigarettes. Jeff, haven't you just described vaping?
Congress isn't meant, Congress and the FDA are not meant to be the private sector. The private sector came up with vaping as a market-based solution to a very real public health problem. I think the public health community, which is all about big government, sees vaping as a threat to the idea that we're here from the government and only we can save you.
Well, and Jeff, one of the things I'd pointed out is that Great Britain is probably one of the countries that is most similar culturally, economically, and every other way to the United States. There are some differences. We're not like the Brits, and we don't want to be like the Brits, but they took an entirely different approach, as I understand it, to vaping. They said, hey, vaping's a great way to get people to take their nicotine in another form that I've had doctors describe as reducing 95% of the deleterious health effects of smoking. In other words, you still get the nicotine, and you can decide to meter it down if you want to. Vaping makes that a whole lot easier if that's what you want to do. But even if you just switch from smoking cigarettes, you know, burn products and inhaling them along with the tar, and it kills you, or it can increase your chance of death, and switch to a different form where you still get your nic fix, but you don't have all the other burn products in your lungs. The Brits embraced that, didn't they?
And they've had tremendous success, you're right. And they've had tremendous success in helping people quit smoking. And guess what? They did not have a problem of youth vaping, something that we did have here, because the FDA has totally mishandled it. We can solve problems. We need innovation. And the FDA seems to want to say, no, no innovation. We don't want new products. We don't want people to have pleasure. We from the government are here to solve your problems by banning the product that you want and making unavailable to you the lower risk alternative that actually makes sense.
Well, and Jeff, again, you may not want to go this far, but I think this is actually aimed at killing people. And here's the argument I'd make. If you take the average smoker and you say, right now your cigarette has X amount of nicotine in it, we're going to reduce it to, you know, one-tenth of X. So the satisfaction you get from smoking a cigarette, you'd have to smoke 10 to get the same satisfaction if it was that dramatic a reduction. So the person who says, yeah, I had a cigarette, but I've still got the feeling I want some of that nicotine, so I'm going to go out and smoke four or five more. Then the very, it's not the nicotine that's causing cancer. It's not the nicotine that's making you sick. It's not what's clogging up your lungs. It's the burn products. So you go out and smoke two or three or four or five cigarettes, and the government has found a quicker way to kill you. Maybe this is actually aimed at solving our Social Security problem. What do you think?
Unfortunately, it may do that, but the government, at least the FDA, recognizes the problem of compensatory smoking. So instead of saying we're reducing your nicotine by 10% or from 10 parts to one part, they want to reduce it to like 0.01 parts of nicotine. The only reason they want to do that is because Congress said you can't ban nicotine in cigarettes. So,
but doesn't that mean
the issue of compensation?
But doesn't that mean people are going to compensate? They may not smoke, well, if you did the math, what, 100 cigarettes to get the same satisfaction you got from one? I doubt people are going to go out and smoke five packs of cigarettes in place of one.
And that's what the FDA is saying here, is we're going to make it so low. The problem is that would cause a tremendous black market problem.
Yeah, which we've already seen the model for that in vaping, which, again, the FDA mishandled. And rather than embracing the British approach and say, if we can get them off the burning part and on to just delivery of the nicotine, I've had doctors say to me, well, nicotine isn't necessarily good for you, but it's no worse than caffeine. Well, of course, we run on coffee in this country, not tea. Mm-hmm. But the delivery mechanism is just drinking a cup of good hot black coffee or gummed up with all the stuff that Starbucks shoves into it. In any case, we have a delivery mechanism that doesn't bother anybody, so they say that's okay. Although, who knows? Maybe the FDA will go after my cup of Joe.
If you smoked coffee, it wouldn't be good for you either.
No, I'm sure it wouldn't, and I don't plan to start anytime soon. Jeff, where can people find the pieces you wrote? At the Consumer Choice Center?
At the Consumer Choice Center on my website, Jeff Steyer, JeffStier.org.
It is a pleasure. Jeff Steyer, thanks very much. Senior Fellow at the Consumer Choice Center. Back in just a moment. Glad to get your calls. 866-HEY-LARS. Naysayers to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to Lars Larson Show. Whether it's in your yard or in the field, call 811 before you dig. It is the law. Call 811 to know what's below or go to digsafelyoregon.com for details. And, of course, the Washington version of that as well. Believe me, I do it. Naysayer Scott is on the line. Scott, we love the naysayer on this program. What do you and I disagree about today?
Hi, Lars. We disagree about teachers having guns in the classroom or having access to concealed weapons permit.
Why?
If you see, there was a shooting similar to Uvalde in Colorado about last year, November, where somebody had a concealed weapons permit, killed the active shooter, and was killed by police. And when police go into school,
that can happen. It's very unusual, but that can happen. Did you hear about the shooting last week in Alabama?
No, sir.
Man came to a little. I guess, Scott, giving me examples like that, let me tell you where I think there's a flaw in your thinking. Do you know that occasionally there is an accident involving a car in which the seatbelt kills the person in the crash?
Yes, sir. I understand that argument. However, it makes complete sense. But what I'm saying is that when the police go into the classroom, they don't know who the shooter is, whether it's male, female. They go looking for a gun. Whoever possesses a gun will be, you know, taken out. So
Scott. You left out if somebody has a gun and they're presenting a threat. Now, I'm sure there will be circumstances where somebody with a gun has the gun and the police see the person and believe that they present a threat. The thing that works against that, I tell people all the time, the best study the Department of Justice, the Federal Department of Justice ever did on this, says that about a million times a year, Americans stop a crime. Usually they're the purported victim, or the victim that was going to be the victim. And they don't become a victim because they pull out a gun, they point it at the bad guy, and the bad guy runs away or stops what he's doing. Now, why do you suppose it is that we don't hear about, if that happens a million times a year, why aren't we hearing about thousands of innocent people being shot to death by the police after they've defended themselves with a gun?
I don't know, but
I can tell you why. I can tell you why. Because the people who have the gun, if they've gone in and shot the bad guy, at that point, in many cases, they will put the gun down at their side, right? And they will, you know, when the police arrive, they understand the police are there. If they're smart, they may even set the gun down on the pavement within their reach or on a table. That's how they act. And that's why you have a million times a year that people defend themselves with a gun. And then, but usually the police are there minutes later, sometimes many minutes later. In the case of Uvalde, an hour later. And so it just reminds me of that argument that the people say, I never wear the seatbelt. Seatbelts can kill you. Well, that's literally true. There are a very small number of cases where the seatbelt ends up causing the injury instead of stopping the injury. But we both know what happens in the vast majority of car crashes. The seatbelt keeps you alive. And without the seatbelt, you'd be dead, right?
Lars, may I bring up another point quickly?
Please do.
I want to bring up the fact that even in stressful, active situations, the police often are not as good as shot. And what I'm saying is that teachers who possess these, police can't even hit the target, let alone, you know, somebody that's in the profession. But if you have a teacher who may not have as much practice, you know, you're in a stressful situation.
Yep.
You may not hit the target.
And that's true. And that is true. And people say you might accidentally hit a good guy. Again, I'll go back to the 1 million from the DOJ study. Why do you suppose we don't hear about dozens or hundreds or thousands of people being inadvertently hit by an honest law-abiding citizen with a concealed carry who shoots at a bad guy? Why do you suppose that doesn't happen?
I don't know, Lars.
Okay, because in the vast majority of cases, they never fire a shot. And I'll give you, do you recall a shooting at Clackamas Town Center just a number of years ago?
Yes, sir.
Do you know what stopped it?
I do not recall what stopped it.
What stopped it was a guy named Nick Mealy. And he had a gun, was carrying it legally. He pointed it at the bad guy. But he realized that if he shot at the bad guy, what was behind the bad guy was innocent people. So he didn't fire the shot. Do you know what the bad guy did when he saw that gun pointed at him? The police say he ran down one of the halls of the mall where the shooting had happened and put a bullet in his head, which is probably the only good decision he made that day. So bad guys tend to be cowards. Many of these mass shootings end either with suicide by cop, they get shot to death by the cops, or you find, like in the Aurora, Colorado theater shooting, James Holmes murdered a bunch of people. Did he run from the scene? No. Was he holding a gun when the police showed up? No. He sat down in his car with no gun in his hands and waited for the police to arrive. And he was taken into custody. Why? Because these killers, the ones who commit these mass shootings, are cowards. They're cowards, and the minute they're challenged, they tend to just give up, put their hands up, and they end up in custody. You've got the Lars Larson Show.